So what is this book about, Harmony, the Heartbeat of Creation? It's essentially a journey that begins with an inquiry into the mystery of number 12, and through a series of encounters, first with musicology, then with Plato's picture of world creation, gradually uncovers, through the enigma of 12, the common ground of world and consciousness. This common ground is harmony. The adventure took me by surprise, not because the question was new, but because I thought I had gone as far as I could possibly go in my inquiry about 12 in a previous book. The question was, why 12? What is it about number 12 that could explain how prominent it is in our cosmological setup? We have 12 months in a year, 12 hours on the clock, in our bodily constitution, the 12 meridians of acupuncture, for example, and in our cultural imaginations, 12 Greek gods, 12 tribes of Israel, 12 apostles, 12 imams, 12 grail knights, 12 gates of the apocalypse. I became intrigued by 12 many years ago, and what intrigued me was the similarity of structure centered on 12 between the two poles of our human experience, the most peripheral around us, the workings of the cosmos, and the most internal in us, the structure of ourself. While we live in a cosmic framework of 12 monthly cycles, sources of wisdom tell us that the subtle vessel of our individuality is a 12-petal lotus, often referred to as the causal body. So there is a striking mirroring between a cosmic 12-fold around us and a subtle 12-fold within us, which points to a shared ground for two realities we tend to perceive as separate, cosmos and self. This mirroring of structure also suggests that number 12 might hold a key to their connection. Now, the question of the relation between world and self, matter and consciousness, mind and body, is a question that has taken center stage in science since the beginning of the 20th century, with the advent of quantum physics, depth psychology, and a few decades later, the development of neurosciences. So the mystery of 12 seemed quite relevant to the search for a ground of understanding that would reflect the new awareness that physics and consciousness, matter and psyche, are not entirely separate realities. This question of the connection between objective and subjective worlds was not a question I had been pondering. And yet, what gradually emerged as the very hub of this journey of inquiry into 12 is a form of answer to this question. I later found that Carl Jung had proposed a similar view in an intuition he had about number. Jung said, quote, "The sought-after borderland between physics and psychology lies in the secret of the number." What we realize when we further inquire into 12 is that 12 is in fact one side or one facet of a dual enigma which involves 12 and 7. In the phenomena of nature, 12 is often found in the company of 7. We have 12 lunation cycles a year, and the cycle of the moon is 4 times 7 days, 12 months in a year, 7 days in a week. We have 12 chromatic notes and 7 diatonic notes, 12 thoracic vertebrae and 7 cervical vertebrae, 12 zodiacal constellations and 7 planets. So back to the genesis of this book, as I mentioned, I thought I had reached the limit of what I could fathom about 12, and I was about to leave this quest behind, when a small event pointed me to a third entrance into the mystery. Between the zodiacal 12 and the inner 12-petal lotus, a third 12-fold literally blew open in front of me in a conversation with a musician friend. We were sitting at a cafe, and I was mulling over the parallels that were still puzzling me between the 12-7 pair that I just mentioned and the series of 7 octaves and 12-fifths on which Western musicology is based. It is the relation between these two series that generates the musical scale. In the course of the conversation, this friend used an expression I had not heard before, even though I had a general background in piano and music. The expression was the circle of fifths. I had always seen the series of 12 fifths and 7 octaves presented as a vertical sequence. What the circle of fifths was introducing instead was a representation of their coming together into a circle, a third circle of 12. In addition, the third 12-fold carried with it the notion of the fifth, which, for reasons I explain in the book, immediately evoked the soul dimension. So what stood in front of me now was a grand new gate into the reality of 12. Now, why this felt significant and promising is that while there is no way to explain the cosmological cycles involving 12 and 7, they are simply part of the mystery of the cosmos we live in, nor is there a way to understand why the 12-petal lotus of selfhood is structured the way it is, there might be a way to understand how one arrives at the 12-fold musical scale, which then might shed light on the formative process of cosmos and soul. It is this renewed anticipation that set off the journey of this book. The first step was to gain an understanding of the laws of harmony and the formation of the musical scale. The second phase of the journey unfolded quite naturally from the first. It would be to trace the scale to its source. The musical scale was first introduced in the West by Pythagoras, so the destination would be ancient Greece, and more specifically, the Pythagorean teachings contained in Plato's dialogue, the Timaeus. The focus of the Timaeus is the creation of the world, which echoed precisely what seemed to underlie the secret of 12. After some reading and decrypting, I was stunned to discover that the first step in Plato's account of the creational process, the formation of the world soul, describes the emergence of a 12-fold soul compound. This is the term used in the translation. According to Plato's mathematical harmonic model, 12-foldness is the essential feature of the world soul. And what he introduces, based on the Pythagorean legacy, is a cosmology grounded in the laws of harmony, a picture of world and soul co-deployment that is rooted in the numbers 1, 2, 3, then 12 and 7. However marvelous this harmonic picture might be, given the premises of this journey, it was clearly quite removed from anything our contemporary mind would be inclined to give serious consideration to. The coherence felt so compelling, though, that I wanted to inquire into the potential validity of this picture from the perspective of modern science. So the next phase of the journey became a step-by-step descent through centuries of scientific discoveries to see if this picture could be corroborated and possibly even find grounds of convergence with our current scientific framework. I will only say that the adventure proved deeply illuminating, and the unified understanding that resulted was a great source of joy, which is what I hope to share with the reader. So, what are some of the insights the reader can anticipate to gain along the way? First, that every form in the universe, beginning with the universe itself, comes into existence through the phenomenon of harmony, In other words, through the sustained creative interplay of waves of energy. This should not be too great a surprise, since vibration and vibrational wave fields are widely regarded as the ground of our cosmos and the ground of our being, whether we refer to the Big Bang or to the Word, to background radiation, quantum field, or to the breath of Brahma. A second major recognition is that the golden mean is the sovereign instrument of this harmonic process of world creation. We know that the golden mean and the Fibonacci series are dominant features of nature. There are numerous books and works on the subject, but we generally don't understand why. We sense that there is something very meaningful about it, but what seems to be missing is a penetration into what connects geometry and harmony. It's only when we recognize in the musical fifth the harmonic equivalent of the golden mean that we access the connection between the geometries of nature and the vibrational wave ground of life. It's only with this connection that we understand how the golden mean can be the mean or the way life flows into forms. With this awareness, the word logos becomes reinvested with its dual scientific and spiritual content. Logos with a small l is the Greek term for proportion, and the golden mean is the divine proportion. Logos with a capital L speaks to the word of the beginning, the I am. So in this word logos, world and self come to a unison. The formations of nature and the beingness indwelling them recognize each other as one. We eventually discover in a later phase of the book how this logoity appears at the very core of the atom. So to say that harmony is the heartbeat of creation is more than a lovely idea. It is a literal fact in matter, nature, cosmos, and soul life. From the atomic structure to the pulsing of the heart, from the DNA to the laws of planetary motion, and from the experience of love to the processes of psycho-spiritual growth. A third major sighting along the way is the significance of a principle which stands behind the spiraling motions and shapes of nature, the principle of logarithmic unfolding. This may sound rather abstract and dry, but whether we look at a shell, a human ear, or a galaxy, this is simply the dynamic we see at work. We also find it in chemistry, in the table of the elements, in phylotaxis, in the chain of being of ancient wisdoms, and in the musical scale. If we go beyond what feels like a dry notion from school mathematics, we discover that the word logarithmic is a remarkable word. Etymologically, it means the number, arithmos, of the logos. And what we find is that it actually speaks to the dynamics of the logos in cosmos. It is, in fact, the dynamic potential of the golden mean itself. So in this beautiful word, logos rhythmic, ontology and cosmology, soul and world, transcend their apparent dichotomy. The last sight I will mention is what gradually emerged as the archetypal form of all living forms. This form of forms is the dual vortex, which is also referred to as Taurus, T-O-R-U-S. The Taurus is increasingly at the center of holistic views of the universe, and a few scientists have advanced that it might be our best current model for it. What we come to understand in the context of this book is that the Taurus is essentially a harmonic flow form that is born of the laws of consonance, meaning the harmonious relation between the part and the whole. When we recognize in the Taurus the fundamental form of forms, we begin to see the archetypal gesture of life in every fruit, every plant, every chakra, every body and cosmic system. It is the dynamic flow form of the heart organ, the organ of life. What comes into view is that the heart itself may be regarded as the archetypal organ, a fractal of the great universal Taurus, which is something the Bhagavad Gita alludes to, and something that we recognize intuitively as a vital, psychological, and spiritual truth. It's important to add that while we trace the laws of harmony on which this whole exploration is based through the musicology of the West, they are not specific to Western culture. The most interesting in this regard is to discover that the same laws underlie Indian musicology, which is one of the most ancient musical systems and a traditionally enigmatic one for Western musicologists. It is also fascinating to see how these laws, in turn, shed light on the underpinnings of the Sumerian pantheon, or on the foundations of ancient Chinese and Egyptian cultures, or on the cosmogony of the people of Mali in Africa. In the end, I would like to emphasize that this book is written for everyone. It is not written for scientists, nor is it written by a scientist, but it is for the scientist in all of us who seeks to understand the mysteries of the universe. It is not written for psychologists, but it is for that place in us that ponders the interplay between self and other, self and circumstances. It is not written for astrologers, but it sheds new light on the rational foundations of a practice that many value or are curious about. And it is not written for esotericists, but it draws a lot from wisdom teachings, and it collaborates with them. It was quite striking, for instance, to find out towards the end of this expedition that Steiner had spoken to the central significance in the human constitution of the proportion 1, 3, 7, 12. My hope is that beyond the bit of endurance this journey requires, it will be as much of a source of joy and illumination as it was for the author.